Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, December the 20th, 2015, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. My name is Granton Taylor Hughes for my show, The Granton Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. Didn't I do a splendid intro today?
Yes, you did. It sounded like you were recording.
It wasn't recording. It wasn't really me. I played a recording back.
That's interesting.
I was trying to do it in my best William F. Buckley-esque, you know. Actually, it would be more like this, you know. And a more lilt to the end of my session.
Yes, he had a certain lilt to his voice.
Yes. And a certain egomaniacalism, too. But it'd be hard to go through a
which
day
he took
like
pride
that.
In.
Pardon me?
I said, which he took pride in, I believe.
Yeah, you'd be exhausted by the end of the day if you were that egotistical, I think. Just couldn't survive. You know? I mean, it takes a lot of theatricism to really emote. I often wonder about the British. They seem to be very theatric, but I have a lot of very dear friends. I guess you get used to it after a while. It's like having a disc jockey voice. Yes, and now, and all that stuff. Having said all that, behavioral psychology. Are we into behavioral psychology on the show? I'm not sure, are we?
I don't think that's part of the agenda, but I guess it could be if you wanted it to be.
Well, like I'm always saying, it's my show. I can do what I want. But then if we give a definition or description of the show, we're supposed to probably align with that description a bit, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Well, and each week what we attempt to do, and I promised last week I'd go into the plank, sovereignty, well, actually health, sovereignty, solvency, and afianchetto. And I get off the beaten track because I've done so many shows, why not, right? So I'm always saying that if you don't have your health, what's the point of politics and money? Because if you're not healthy, but people get rich and they're sickly and die off. One of my mentors, Claude Bristol, I think he died when he was 60. And I don't. His background is very obscure, so it's hard to. Some of these leader types and motivators of the past, I think, sometimes have obscure history. So I don't know what happened to the guy. So whether he fell off a stool like Arnold Arendt, who was a fasting guru at one time. And he died as a young man. Yeah, and I tell that all the time about it. You're trying to find out if he died from fasting. It would have been nice for them to do a bio initially. But apparently he fell off a stool and hit his head. But then some say it was a dubious occurrence, like he had been pushed or something, for all those conspiracy theorists out there. Right? Which they seemingly, I think sometimes they're okay, but, you know, they get a little carried away with everything being a conspiracy, I suppose. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't frankly care about some of those things. I do look at pretty much everything, but I try to decipher the wheat from the shaft. All right, so this week, since I promised I'd go over the planks, we know that the people that have been following the show for a long time know that I'm a raw vegan, and I consider that really the best diet if you can. But I think, to me, the veganism is more of a plague than we call it the SAD, standard American diet, the SAD diet, where there's a 65% of the population are obese, which means 50 pounds overweight. So that's a real plague in itself of people being obese. However, I think veganism is really the next wave of a real problem because, albeit, I know that not eating cooked food is considered strange or whatever. To me, it's not because I've been doing it for about 9 years, and it's been really helpful, as you know. You've been doing it for a long time, too. So,
yes.
Yeah, and so I think it's a very healthy way to go. But we talk about hydration, and I'll just give the equation before I get into the other more political topics. That 1 ounce of water per pound of weight. So if somebody weighs 120 pounds, they drink 120 ounces. That's what it'd be equivalent to. And I think that's the minimum amount of water that people should intake each day, instead of that more of a half equation where 8 8-ounce glasses equals 64 ounces. That seemed to be never enough for me. And also, that doesn't really help me on the track when I'm running, because when I eat closer to the proper equation, then I don't have any soreness in the ankle, knee, or hip socket, because that's where a runner obviously will have stress points. And when you're properly hydrated, you're lubricated too as well, and that helps a great deal when I'm running. So I noticed over the years, when I properly hydrate, and then at more gross level, your urine is clear, means, you know, it shows that you're hydrated, is a very important consideration for me. And I know it is for you, since you're a runner too as well, that you found that that was something very important in terms of the hydration for running, for runners.
Yeah, absolutely. If I don't heat it, then I have problems. So I try to be aware of it.
It's very important. All right, so that's an easy part of diet, is hydration. And so most people, I think, that are overweight are simply dehydrated. And if people that are overweight check their urine and it has any color in it, then that's dehydration. And maybe medical doctors will argue with that. I don't care what they say. All I know is that I abide by what the SAS of Great Britain, which is a template for all the special forces in the world, and they demand of all their troops to have clear urine. I know it's gross, but nevertheless, it's the way that is. All right. Mm-hmm. So moving on to a more political topic in terms of sovereignty. And on my UK call on Sunday mornings, we were talking about this as well, that there is a fidelity ceremony that is done in trust work to create the pure trust, a trust foundation. And in terms of that trust, the question was brought out that a fidelity ceremony is between two people. And then they said, are they sovereign? I said, well, yes, they're ordained sovereign. And ordained sovereign means when you're, by birth, you're ordained sovereign, okay? Meaning that's a political criteria in reference to a designation in society of what sovereignty would be. And now the word itself means sole reign. Like, that means that the essence of man is in control. But sovereign has taken on more of a political connotation and pretty much lost that meaning a long time ago. So when we talk about sovereignty, we're talking about an individual in society that is born into it, but doesn't necessarily have documented, certified sovereignty, which I find to be very important, excuse me, in my opinion, in a contracts law world. For instance, we're in an entitlement world. We have paper titles, we have money, and those are contracts as well, because there's two signatures at the bottom of the dollar bill or any other currency. Is signed by officials of the particular government that's issuing the currency. All right, having said that, this idea of sovereignty, enacted sovereignty, is important, because I often use the analogy that many people can understand or have experience when policemen have pulled people off the side of the road and given tickets. Once in a while, they'll say to the driver, did you know that driving is a privilege and not a right? But they never explain that, and of course the driver doesn't question it, because they're already probably in Dutch already without having to go into any extras. But then the policeman, if you were to ask the question, well, what is a right? He wouldn't know it, because in police science and in political science, they don't define what the right is. That there's not a lot of clarity on that. There's an inference to that terminology that we just assume that people know what rights are. But I've often said on this show, we don't have rights. We don't have a plurality of rights. We have a plurality of privileges, but we have only one birthright, which is very important. And the birthright means that the compromise of, we say, the soul, like soul reign, coming into the physical body, because it did all that work at birth, is now entitled to its needs freely, of food, shelter, and clothing. However, that would be at a high evolution or economic level in the recognition that by birth you've brought, entered in a lot of power into the world and you've done all the labor to be paid. But that's gone asunder over many, many decades and centuries and millennia even, that they've lost pretty much contact with that singular birthright. So people in America will stand by what they believe is a fact of my rights. And I'm saying, well, no, you have privileges. And then I try to explain that about the birthright, but then it usually falls on deaf ears, but it doesn't have to, because anybody can come to the political forum that I, even this particular lecture that I give out on Sundays, anybody can come to this, and you can understand after a while through repetition or re-explaining or reiterating information, which is very important. It's important to have repetition. To get it the first time is probably very rare for people to comprehend out of the gate, especially if they've been taught to the contrary when they were children. And I'm not saying that, well, in one sense of the word, I'm not happy with education, university and elementary ed and middle of school and all that business. But in one sense of the word, I'm not necessarily condemning it. I'm just saying that they don't have a lot. They don't have proper information. It's not their fault necessarily. They have curriculums that are traditional, and they have to pursue it from that level. And teachers really can't pursue these things because they have jobs, and then you get into the politics of that business as well. All right, so having said that, the idea of sovereignty, enacted sovereignty, is to give a document that will actually give one the right, enacted right, to use the privilege. Because in ordaining sovereignty without a document, how do I know that you're not a beast in the field? Especially since they teach people that they have five senses and they're not sentient. They don't teach sentience. They teach bovinity, if anything, in schools, that you have five senses. The cat and dog have five senses, so the human has five senses. So how do you prove that you're a sovereign? See, how do you prove that you're human? I mean, that's the irony of a contracts law world. And do you see where I'm running with that, Gabrielle, in terms of that reference?
Yeah, so, all right, so how do you prove that you're a sovereign?
Well, that's what I mean. So, I mean, it's kind of repugnant to say, well, it's obvious we can see a human is different than a dog or a cat, right? We could probably say that by observation.
Yes.
But we can't prove it. How do you prove it, see? So therein lies the fact of contracts. If you're in a contract law world, that means that the basic beginning contract is land titles. You would think it'd be money would be the big issue, but it's not really money. Money's not really the first contract. The first contract is really the trust certificate, and then the trust certificate being the derivation. Everything else is kind of a tearaway coupon, a tear sheet from the trust certificate, all right? And that means that all legal provisions, licenses, all come from that original trust certificate. But the main culprit in that whole thing is the land titles that are also issued by the exchange or grantor of the trust as well. But they're the biggest issue because people don't want to go without land titles. For instance, the American tribes didn't have titles to land. They freely had the land because they considered it greatly abundant, and they weren't into borders and all these things, that their people just would settle on a land and knew their propinquity or proximity problems in terms of their spatial references and things of that nature. If one Indian wanted an acre of land, was fine. If somebody else needed 10 acres, well, they were able to do that. See, it wasn't an issue. See, it was a matter of measuring things and contracting things and paper identification, and here's a title for a certain description, blah, blah, blah. But in the realms of the language of higher Sanskrit, as that people have often heard me speak about, that was more of an open border type issue. And then they were aware of the azimuthal equidistant projection at one time in the high Lemurian culture. But then as it descended, then they moved more so into a more Western thinking when the Western Europeans came to America and really disbanded the culture of the American tribes. And it's no fault of their own. It's the same old history of the Tamarkians, conquerors, that come into the world and then they destroy cultures and then impress their particular culture upon the conquered peoples. And that's the nature of history, the nature of society. And I'm always saying the layers of archaeological studies, that they find the cultures below a culture and you dig deeper and find another culture. And I say, well, get a million-mile shovel and find the millionth culture below, right? And it's a little joke of mine there. Which people have difficulty in understanding that because they say, well, the Earth isn't that thick. And I say, well, it's not really a globe. It's really a helical structure. It's a DNA structure. As above, so below. Our bodies are DNA. We're the first estate. We're the first clay temple. We're made of Earth. We can lay down on the ground and absorb into it. We're clay. All right? So we're DNA. The universe is DNA. It's pretty easy. As above, so below. It's an ancient proverb. All right, now, the idea of the sovereignty comes in reference to documenting it, because now we're going to prove up that individual, that human being, through sight recognition and a trust fidelity ceremony, then the exchange or grantor issues sovereignty, that any human being that desires it, okay, or any human being is entitled to documented sovereignty by their birth, all right? So now when we issue that documented sovereignty, now they can prove that they have the privilege, or not the right, I'm sorry, they have the one birthright to use the privilege. The state will issue privileges of use for their revenue purposes, and that was set up by the trust in the beginning when they set up government. And when government was set up, then those particular provisions allowed them to create revenues in a monetary system through creating privileges of use. So privileges of use is a license, a license to breathe, license to drive, license to be a passenger, license to walk. I know some of those don't exist, but they could if the government imposed them, and they would be lawfully and privilegingly to be able to do that. See, it would be lawful to do that because licenses are lawful, wherein taxes are not lawful, because the word itself means creating a burden. We don't want to put a burden on things, but we create a license which has no really intrinsic understanding or etymological substance other than the fact that someone might have lice. Do you like that? Thank you. Yeah, I just thought that off the top of my head, and I thought, hey, that's a good joke. I'll insert that. Comedians out of work, basically.
And so when they say somebody is performing licentious behavior, it really means they're full of life.
Yes, that's right. I can count on my co-host to be doing her brilliant, and you can see me doing namaste to you. Yeah. You're very wonderful. And I have to bring this up. I know you might not like it, but I'm going to, because I was always saying that the derivation of the word certificate was certified. And I asked you that question one time on the show, because I was trying to set you up. And I said, what's the derivation of the word certificate? And you said certainty or certain. I went, wow. And that just blew me away, because it was better than certify. It's certain. And that's brilliant. See, and then what do you do tonight? Bravo. Thank you very much. It's, licentious behavior, right?
I don't think it was that brilliant, but I appreciate the praise.
Yes. In all of Gabrielle's humility. Yeah. Okay, well done. So, hey, we're really kidders back here. I'm getting all serious about talking about all this sovereignty. I truly apologize, everybody. But I was always in fear of creating a comedy show. Because some of these, I'm not a filthy, profane person. So nowadays, unless you have a filthy mouth, you can't be an on-stage stand-up comic, I think. It's just really rude stuff they do nowadays. It's terrible. So I'm glad I never went into that field. Albeit, I think we do have a lot of chimerical behavior, which is I was mispronouncing that term. Well, I always thought it was chimerical. So I had a dear friend in Delaware who was quite the intellectual, and she said, what's chimerical? I said, chimerical. I said. So we looked it up, and sure enough, the pronunciation is chimerical. And I saw it in some of the Disney works years ago, but I never heard it pronounced. So for years I was saying chimerical, and nobody called me on it until Bonnie did it. So, anyway, funny stuff. All right, so the sovereignty issue is it needs to be enacted in contract, in a contract's law world. If it's not, then people really are creating licensed torts or minor civil offenses because they don't have the document to prove that they're sovereign. You see what I mean? So therefore, the police don't even understand that the driver really is under tort violations. If he knew that, he'd probably arrest them right away because he'd have one for every time you breathe, he's violating his birth certificate. Every breath you take of life, you'd be violating your birth certificate. So they can fine you for every breath you took from the time you're a year old to you're 50, right? And then pull you over on the road and say, well, we're going to have to arrest you for breathing. I say, well, what do you mean? Well, because you don't have a sovereignty certificate, you're violating your birth certificate. Pretty awful, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty wretched.
But they would try to do that if they were aware of it. So maybe I'm doing a disservice to everybody by doing the show. Of course, thank goodness it's not syndicated, right? People would go, oh, we're going to arrest everybody for not having sovereignty certificates and for breathing, correct? Hey, it's a pretty good show tonight, I think. I'm going to keep this up. Yeah. Because, of course, we know that I rehearse it beforehand, correct, Gabrielle? Every week you do a rehearsal.
Yes, I'm sure you rehearse it for a very lengthy time. I'm quite sure of that.
And for the record, no rehearsals do take place, just for the record. We do not rehearse this show. It's all extemporaneous, as they would say, which all my speech teachers would just love me nowadays. But in the old days, forget it, they practically kicked me out of the building. Of course, when I was in my speech class, my knees would shake and my voice would shake. I was very emotional. It was really difficult, especially since I do a lot of public speaking. And in those days, or I've done some television, what have you, if anybody told me I would be doing this today, I would tell them they're completely crazy, right? I'd rather be playing center field for the New York Yankees. Anyway, that was my first love, was baseball, just for those people that didn't know that. All right, so did you have any comments or questions so far? Since we're getting close to the end, we've still got a few minutes left, but if you'd like to put some feedback.
Well,
right?
I think we were going to talk about the other planks, but we didn't get to them. We're just dealing with sovereignty tonight, I suppose, then.
Well, I guess we could. I mean, you can spend many, many hours on these things because it's fascinating and very interesting because we've really left out a really cornerstone in our society because there is no proof of sovereignty, and there's no contracted sovereignty. If you got contracted privileges, birth certificates, fishing licenses, driver's licenses, all these licenses, then how do you utilize them without proof, you see? I mean, just because you're born, then right away you can be licensed. Well, that's true, but then, again, my opinion is that you have to contract sovereignty in order to prove the right to use the privilege. See, if you've got privileges that are contracted, that means the right would have to be contracted too. It goes without saying. It's like A plus B equals C. So you have an ordained sovereign that has no document to prove that he is. See, he's got a birth certificate, but that's issued by the government. The government's created by the trust. It's created by the sovereign, essentially, who creates the trust. And then the trust creates the government, and then the government issues a birth certificate. That's a license. So he doesn't have a right to use that birth certificate. See, in other words, he has ordained sovereignty, but he doesn't have enacted sovereignty to use the birth certificate. So I'm saying you need the sovereignty certificate even before the birth certificate when a child's born. So both those certificates should be in the hospitals, and then you would have the one signed firstly, the sovereignty certificate, then the birth certificate would be thereafter, and you get the state could get revenue only for the birth certificate. The sovereignty certificate is issued privately by the trust. Whether or not they charge for that or not is up to the trust. You see, but that one has to, that's the chicken before the egg. See, in other words, you have to have the original contract to issue the license. Otherwise, immediately you have a license tort for breach of contract. See, there's not a contract sequence there. See, it's very, very critical when people understand what I'm talking about. So I highly recommend to repeat this particular show or repeat some of the ones in the archives if you can ever find them in the discussion of sovereignty. Excuse me. Anyway, so I think I've been very thorough with that tonight, I think. So people should appreciate it that once in a while I have clarity, correct? Are you there, Gabriella?
I am here.
That's good. But don't you think I did a good rendition of sovereignty tonight? I think so.
I think that was a good presentation of it on the show.
Right. It's important. It's important to understand that, again, I'll repeat, we need an enacted, documented, certified sovereignty to be able to use the licenses properly without breaching contract. See, a contract sequence. See, sequence of contracts. You're born in a contracts law world, so therefore you need a sovereignty certificate, a document certified sovereignty. And that means precluding any other licenses in order not to create civil violations or breach of contract. It's just right there. I mean, I think it's so simple to understand, and yet, again, these are details that are missed out, and don't get me started on other things like Area 51 and NASA and all that in terms of what they have and they can't describe, right? See, it's the same thing. We have something, there's something missing, and then somebody like myself comes in there that claims he's recommendibus, and there it is. You know, okay, we've got to wax details here. We've got to bring out the information so that we can understand where the problems lie, and that's the problems with our society, why people aren't interested and bored because they aren't comprehending or they're not getting enough information. It would be like doctors giving analogies and giving metaphors for things that they're teaching people that are completely awry because they don't give the details. And I guess I won't name call, right? All right, that's pretty funny. So we're down to about the last couple minutes. Gabriella, thank you for being on the show this week. Thank you for your commentary and your genius, as always. I really appreciate the really wry joke there. Your timing is always impeccable.
Well, thank you. It's very kind of you to say so. I enjoy the show, and I look forward to... We'll be having a show next week, because that is Christmas weekend.
Right. So it will be the 28th. I don't know.
It'll be the 27th, I believe.
The 27th, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I can do the show next week. I think I can. I'll be here then. So I'll say I'll be here for the show, and everybody have a good Christmas. I say a Merry Christmas. And since I'm here before the New Year, I won't say Happy New Year yet, right? We won't do that part. But we'll do that next week, right? I can say preemptive. Yeah. Yeah, I can say that, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, we'll wait next week to say Happy New Year. And so I'm down to the last, I have to get rid of 15 seconds here. So did you have a song that you'd like to sing, a 15-second song?
A 15-second song. I thought I was going to sing a song. So you asked me to sing a song. I started to sing, and then you started to sing the song.
Well
I've never been so indignant in my life.
I apologize. Oh, you haven't been that indignant to me, right? Okay,
just
I gotta go, everybody. Have a great Christmas. Merry Christmas, and bye for now.